Hey, welcome to the Strongpreneur Nation podcast. My name is Tom Reber, and this is the place where we build uncommon contractors. And today I'm excited to have on a really good friend of mine for, gosh, got to be close to 8 or 10 years now, maybe 10 years, David Chisholm. How you doing, David?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, man, we've been wanting to make this happen for a long time, and finally today it did after we, you know, after I was able to help you with all the technical difficulties that you had. So,
yeah, again, I still use Skype.
Yeah, so David is a, among many things, one of the things he is a technology guy. So it was just kind of funny that you had a hard time.
I had a hard time getting in today.
Yeah, that's all right, man. So before we kick off, tell us about yourself. What do you do? Who are you? And why the heck are you here today?
Well, so the short answer is David Chisholm. I work with painting contractors primarily, and I work with building contractors, anyone with a tool belt, really. And I moved from the great sunny San Diego about 8 years ago, 7.5 years ago, because my wife is from the East Coast, because everybody asked me, why on earth would you move from San Diego to the East Coast, Maryland? Moved out there to do something different and was always interested in the marketing and sales industry, coming from a contracting background. So I started my own marketing management consulting business, where I help keep track of the marketing, all the things related to marketing. So the budget to online marketing to you name it. So started that seven years ago today, based on LinkedIn. I'm getting all these things from LinkedIn congratulating me for 7 years in business. So,
well, happy birthday.
Yeah, thanks. Getting all these canned messages.
That's good. Yeah, you sent me one of those messages today.
Yeah,
one of the marketing guys reaching out to you. So,
yep.
And side note, do not send canned messages to people via LinkedIn or any other network or email, because you look like an idiot. Okay, there you go.
So the first one's okay. It's that you don't know it's canned until they all start coming in like by the dozens. Yeah,
that's right. So you and I met way back in the day as painter guys.
Yep.
And developed a friendship. You know, for those of you listening, David's been instrumental in a lot of things in my life and business. Been a great friend. He's been a mentor in a lot of ways. You know, from everything from the numbers to the business to, you know, marketing stuff and a lot of life and stuff in between. So first of all, I want to thank you for being part of my journey and helping me get better, man. I really appreciate it. So I want to publicly proclaim that you, David Chisholm of adavidcreation.com, have played an instrumental role in helping me win.
And you are a winner for sure. And you've been very easy. It doesn't take much effort on my end, but I'm going to put that on my LinkedIn profile. That's all right.
There you go. You go for it, man.
So today's a LinkedIn day.
It's LinkedIn day. So all right. So we're probably going to have a lot of tangents like this through our talk today, so I'm apologizing in advance to everybody. But we're just going to have some fun, and we're going to shoot the breeze here about marketing and contractors and stuff like that. It's an area that we're both pretty dang passionate about, and I think we're both pretty good at it. So, one of the things I asked David to come on and talk about today, none of this is rehearsed. None of this – there were no questions really. I never send questions in advance, but the one thing I did do with you, David, is I just said, hey, I'd love to maybe talk about some of the most common mistakes that you see contractors make with their marketing. And so that was really the only thing I gave him in preparation for this. And so we're just going to have a conversation around that and then let it go wherever it goes. So, So what do you, what comes to mind when I say, what do guys do that are pretty stupid mistakes in general?
Yeah. Well, first I got to start
that we've all done, right?
We've all done. So, exactly. That's where I wanted to start, is making sure, because I don't want to be too critical here, because we've all made these mistakes. I've made these mistakes as well. So I did kind of jot down, as you know, that I do that beforehand. I jotted down a few things that were on my mind that I thought were mistakes. And again, things that you and I have both done. So those watching or listening, I think the takeaway is that some of you guys are going to hear, I think we have 11 or 12 of these things we're going to share. There might be one or two that you're going to like, yep, that's me. We do that all the time. So It's going to be critical because we're going to hammer you guys, some of you guys. But that's what, Tom, you're all about. You mm-hmm. push these guys to do things that they know they need to hear but don't always want to hear it. So, yeah, I mean, the first thing that came to mind was, and this is in no order, but this happened recently, is they contractors think that they have to give a proposal to everybody.
Hmm. Yeah, if anyone's ever listened to this show, they know that I frown upon that, but tell us where that comes from.
Well, that came from – I was actually just talking to an estimator recently, and he was telling me how much – he's actually a part-time estimator. He's not full-time. He was telling me that he only has so much time throughout the week, and he was describing what it's like to go through the estimate process and all that. And I said, well, are you giving estimates to everybody? He said, yeah, pretty much. And I said, why? He said, well, because my boss told me to. Mm-hmm. I said, did he really tell you to give an estimate to everyone, or you know, what about the pre-qualification? So as I'm digging a little deeper, I got to the point and I said, look, you need to ask good questions. You need to, you know, connect with your, you know, prospect, and it's okay to give a ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
Just see if you're in the running for this thing, because there's a lot of people, especially online, that aren't a good fit. They're just, you're a number to them, you know, rapport with them, connect with them. But, you know, you can save probably an hour or two per proposal by not writing a proposal. So every time you go on an estimate and you're out there, and I also told them, if you think you can close it, do it on the spot or as much as possible.
Sure.
Or at least get that commitment to it's worth the time to go back and do it. And so anyways, from his limited amount of hours per week, 10 to 12 hours a week, he's probably able to do, you know, 4 or 5 estimates. I said, I bet you could do 10 or 15 estimates by not giving a proposal to everybody.
Yeah.
He's like, wow, that's so.
Well, Matt, you know, a lot of, what do we hear all the time from contractors? They don't have time to do networking or marketing or write a blog or whatever the heck it is we're going to talk about here today. They always talk about they don't have enough time. And, you know, a lot of that time can be recaptured by just being better on the telephone, like you said, and pre-qualifying and not running on the hamster wheel like most of us have done or do.
Exactly.
And so I think that surprised me that you came out of the gate on a common marketing mistake people make for you to talk about proposals. Yeah. So,
and it's not just related to the home improvement industry. It's just about everybody. It's just common that people think, oh, I have to give a proposal.
Yeah. Well, I remember this time of year, you know, we're springtime, and I remember always feeling that rush of adrenaline and energy when the phone would start to ring. And, you know, all of us contractors, we can't wait to get out and freaking bid something.
Yeah.
Know. You know, especially those in the colder climates. You know, you San Diego people, you didn't have to deal with that. But you do in Maryland now. But the point is that, you know, we're chomping at the bit to run out there and make something happen. And so, I encourage people to fight that urge and pick up the phone first, have a good conversation and pre-qualify and talk about money and all that other stuff that you just shared. So cool, man. What else? What other mistakes?
All right. So the next one I wrote down, again, no order here, is the phone system. So I think a lot of contractors think that they're big enough. I'm going to offend some of my private one clients here too. They think they're big enough to get an automated phone system. Press 1 for sales, press 2 for so-and-so, and then all that. So what I mean by that is, I think people still like to talk to real people. They don't want to push buttons. That's big corporation companies doing that. So I think it's a mistake. I think you should be answering the phone. And if you have an issue with how you're answering, you can't answer a phone, you want to push all those buttons, try to make it as super easy for the prospect.
Okay, so what type of contractor would this be good for, if any, in your opinion?
I don't think it's – I think with thing. The – yeah, I don't think – it's a good question. I think that there's enough outsourced ways out there to get the phone answered. So there's mm-hmm. Still the old school call center or just answering service, live person. You know, it's common practice. You know, you want to pick up the phone after like 2 rings in a service industry. You know, some of the rest of us like coaches and marketing guys, you know – you know, you can kind of get away with this, but in the home service industry where someone's looking to get an estimate for something, at least during business hours, you should be picking up your phone and not sending it through all these. And I've seen this to be true. The reason I brought this up, the reason I put this down is we've been looking at analytics. Here we go. for web leads, and you can listen to the recordings, all stuff.
Geek alert, geek alert, analytics. Here we go.
I know. You know, I love to do that. Yeah. So we've been, watching people hang up the phone after they sometimes will listen to the whole recording, and they get frustrated at the end. They're like, okay, press, seven to listen to this message again, And so they'll get all the way to the end, and you can, listen to these recordings, and they'll listen to the automated, okay, leave your message, and they just get frustrated and hang up. So on average, during normal business hours, you should be picking up your phone. There's also call centers, people that actually can take your information, connect with you, and sound like they're right there with your company. They can have access to your CRM and all that kind of stuff and schedule appointments for you too. So if that's the issue, if that's what's holding back, I would steer away from the whole, automated phone system. Get someone early morning to late afternoon, early evening, pick up that. And then people understand if they're going to call after hours, leave a message.
And when you're sharing all that, and I'm thinking of the experience I've had when I've called places and I get those automated, systems. It reminds me of, the phrase time kills deals. Like, I think it's just one, you think about all it takes to get somebody to call you, or all it takes to get somebody to log onto your website. And, we need to make it as easy as possible for people to communicate with somebody in our company quickly, so that they don't move on to the next thing. Because I've personally done it where, I was calling different florists in town, looking to get some flowers here for my wife not too long ago. And I remember every company that asked me to leave a message, I just hung up.
Yeah. And, I did the same thing.
And the person that answered the phone got the order, and they were like the third or fourth phone call. So that's a good one, man.
And that's you and me being impatient, but we're right. Like a lot of people. Uh-huh. And the also thing we're doing the geeky analytics here is that, I think that if someone's going to pick up the phone today in today's age, they want to talk to somebody. You can leave a message. Sure. You can do the chat programs. You can do the emails and all that. And that's people waiting. I had this conversation yesterday with a client, and they're in the restoration business, the flood restoration. So they said most people call them. Hey, if you got a leak, you're going to call somebody. You're not going to wait around for 24 hours for that email. And they want to speak to a live person. So if you don't have that feature, again, I think you're losing business over it.
Yep. All right, what'd you have next?
All right, so this is think that they need a blog. So
a mistake they make is they think they need a blog.
Yeah, so
you're going to undo everything I've been doing for the past 5 years now,
I know.
Okay, thanks.
You've got to explain a little bit more, though.
Go for it.
Right? So, how many times have you had a contractor come up to you and say, hey, I need a blog?
Uh-huh.
I need a website. I don't have that. I don't have a blog, so I need one. Can you please install a blog on my website?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you can say, yeah, sure, I can put a blog on your website. But that's kind of where it stops primarily, right there. So everyone just thinks, hey, I need to start blogging, or I just need one. So that's where I think it's a mistake, because it's a lot more than that. And they think by having another site, and it's kind of old school practice by having the navigation, have the blog at the top because everyone's going to click on it, right? No.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it stops. And I think it's a mistake that they got to dig a lot deeper. It's not a magical formula to just have a blog.
So what does digging deeper look like?
They got to have that's where you come in, content, right? And Marcus Sheridan, who's been on your show,
mm-hmm.
you got to get into you got to get your feet. You got to dive all in. You got to start. It's not just the blog. If you're going to install the blog on your site, you better start using it. You got to start telling your story. You got to start educating people. I mean, it's funny. We've been talking about this for years. We think the content marketing is getting old. Okay, everyone's doing it, but there's still room for the home improvement guys to get involved. There's not a lot of people doing it well.
Yeah.
Sheridan made. He became popular because he was one of the few pool company guys out there just to do it. And he's, of course, coaching people to do it. And you and I have a few clients that do it, but there's still lots and lots of room mm-hmm. to tell your story to your audience, again, also, I think this is a little broader. They think that, just start in your community. It doesn't have to go nationwide. And people think, gosh, I'm only getting a few visitors to my website. Two or three people read my blog. That's a start. Mm-hmm. Gotta start somewhere.
Right. So what David is referring to about Marcus Sheridan, back on Strongpreneur episode number 6, I talked with Marcus a little bit about content marketing and building a stronger business through that. And one of the things I like to do to simplify the whole content thing, and I think you nailed it, man. Just because you put a blog up doesn't mean that you're going to get traffic. You know, I see a lot of blogs where people share things like company news and things that your average person on Google who is not searching for. So, yep. So anyway, to simplify, if you're considering creating any sort of content, and so when we talk about content marketing, there's different tactics or tools. There's a blog, there's video, there's, you know, different social media channels that you can use, whatever it is. There's all these different ways that we can push our content out. I try to just, you know, teach people to just commit to being the best educator in your industry, in your area. If you just approach it from the mindset of I'm going to create a blog so that I can educate people, because what that does, if you go to you guys listening here, if you go to ralawn.com, it's a landscaper and water feature guy out of Kalamazoo, Michigan. And they just launched their new site, but they've been blogging. Brianne over there has been kicking butt over the last several months. And you go to that website and you start tooling around and you look at the videos and you look at the blogs and the things they're producing. As a consumer, you can't help but look at their website and think, wow, these guys are really the experts. And it's not that everyone's going to read every blog, right, David? It's what's the perception? The perception is, oh, my God. Look at, you know, and if you go to Marcus Sheridan's riverpoolsandspas.com or whatever the heck it is, we'll put it in the show notes. You go there and it's just this wealth of anything that you could ever imagine wanting to know about a fiberglass pool. And so do not, as David said, don't just create a blog if you're not really willing to put in the work and be the educator that it's going to take. Otherwise, you're just going to be one of the many people that says, oh, blogging doesn't work. It was a stupid waste of time. All right, sorry, I hijacked your point there. But
no, that's what we're here for today. Back and forth there.
All right, what'd you have next?
Well, so this next one is they can't let go. It's kind of they micromanage everything.
Yeah.
So everyone needs to hear this. Every business owner needs to hear this. It's their baby. If they think that if it's not perfect, it's not going to go well. So that's where it sits. So they also micromanage the people that work for them too. Mm-hmm. So it's the marketing guys too. I mean, I see that. So they'll hire people to do all the work, whether it's the web or maybe help with some content marketing or getting the mailers out. And they just have to, hey, this is my company. This is the way I want it. And that needs to stop. Let it go.
Where's that come from? Any experience in that?
Yeah. With all my girls? Yeah. Got 5 girls, so yeah, we've heard that song, Let It Go, more times than you can imagine. It should be kind of the background music of today's show, though.
Yeah, Let It Go.
Yeah.
Well, and that's true. You know, think of it this way. As a contractor, I remember we painted a house once, and I had this dude stand at the bottom of my ladder the whole day. Mm-hmm. And tell me what a great job I wasn't doing. I could picture it like it happened yesterday. And, you know, I think I was using like a roller on the siding, and then I had a brush to hit the corners and, you know, things like that. And I'd be using the roller and the corner wouldn't be done yet. And he'd be like, Hey, you missed a spot. Like I heard that all day, you know, and I might have accidentally dripped paint down below to land on them. But anyway, so we don't like people as contractors, we don't like people telling us how to build something or paint something or do our job. And so that's what I would encourage on this point is you hire somebody, pay them good money, and then get the heck out of their way, which is exactly what you want your clients to do as a contractor. You know, how many clients, David, do you know that bitch about people that don't want to pay for the value they're going to get by hiring them, but then they turn around and they gripe at a marketing guy like you, you know, about, oh, you're too expensive or whatever. you know, you do this for a lot of people and you're really dang good at it. So I'm going to just give you a commercial right now. So, cause I feel like it, hire David and get the heck out of his way. Let him and his team do what they do best and just write the check and let them tweak and poke and prod at your marketing. And I guarantee you the result down the road will be what you wanted. So just like you want a homeowner to get out of your way and pay you for what you know.
Yeah. And I think that it, the companies I work with that do that, who know me, because this is part of my personality. I don't like to be micromanaged. I don't think anyone does. But the companies that utilize my services that trust me, they have to trust you. They get out of my way. And they're more – they're growing. They're successful. We have a good working relationship because of the trust that – and, you know, if I – you know, obviously, if I got questions for them or I need their feedback, I do need that. But when they get out of our way and let – our guys do what we're supposed to do, and we communicate what we're doing. Don't stop that. It's more a successful campaign in all. Jim.
So, true or false, would you say that marketing in general, this is a very big blanket statement, marketing in general is a journey, kind of a little bit of research and development, a little bit of trial by fire. Does that make sense? You know, it's not like you just you paint a wall and the wall's painted and it's done. Well, marketing is rarely the type of thing where you flip a switch and it's quote unquote done.
True.
Do you agree with that? What do you don't agree with? What are your thoughts on that?
I think there's always a trial into marketing for sure, but there's tried and true methods that work. So. Again, just having a website, just having a blog, just throwing out mailers, you know, that's not, there needs to be a strategy behind it. There needs to be a conversation. Hey, who are you trying to go after here? That kind of thing. What's your ideal client look like? But there has to be a process, branding. You have to brand your company and it takes time. So there's really nothing you can do to if you're a brand new business, just starting out and saying, hey, if I just pay this guy a lot of money, I should be getting leads next week. That doesn't work that way either. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of these, you know, online companies to do the lead generation, you know, to sign up and you know where that goes. I mean, a lot of the times you get really crappy leads because they don't know who you are. They're just getting, you're just a numbers game to them. Hey, I need to get five bids. Yeah. So you're one of them. So there has to be a strategy. There has to be, you have to test out a few things a little bit, you know, and that's the other thing too. Sometimes things work better in different parts of the country than others. So paid search, if you're on the Google or email blast, they work differently. They're not exactly the same. I have a New York client who does email blast who gets probably the most unsubscribes possible in the New York City area. People don't like, I mean, they're just New Yorkers and right. They don't like being bothered by all these emails. They probably get enough. Mm-hmm. And this is my New York client telling me this too. He's like, no matter what we do, no matter how often, no matter how less salesy they are, you still get the people just unsubscribe and complaining. But then right. You take that similar same message in another part of the U.S. and it works fine.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of testing and throwing some stuff out there and see what happens. And so what would be a earlier you mentioned certainly there's some tried and true things. So what comes to mind, one or two of those tried and true strategies or tactics that you feel that you can apply across the board in any industry, in any market, that typically will help contractors get what they want?
Well, I think, like you said at the beginning, being an educator, because we tend to contractors start the education process when they knock on the door to do an estimate. Mm-hmm. And that's too late in the process. So if you can start educating people, you know, hopefully weeks or if not months or even years beforehand, that's going to be your best way. So when you knock on that door to do the estimate, you know, you've pre-sold it or you're already an expert. You're like a college professor. Everyone, for the most part, likes their college, you know, certain college professors because right. they're experts in whatever they're talking about. So, again, I would say being the educator but in terms of tried and true practices that – you know, how to be an educator, that's through, you know, the videos, blogging, and even the social network events locally, you know, the BNI groups, chambers, You can be there. I always tell folks there's, you know, two types of folks in the audience. There's the person who's promoting themselves, passing out business cards left and right, and there's the educator, the person on the other side who's just having a good conversation with someone, building relationships, talking about something that's really interesting that he's passionate about. Maybe it's not even related to construction. It might be something, how to fix your iPhone. Yeah. You know, how to turn it on. Here's how you turn it on. Here's how you turn it off. Wow, you're an expert in iPhone. What else do you do for a living? Well, I build homes.
Right.
So sometimes I think the education part, I know we talk about it a lot, you and I and a lot of marketers, but it's really important. In terms of anything else, I would say just going – I would say contractors don't typically do a good job reaching back out to their clients, staying in touch with them. So especially the larger – the painting contractors, the plumbers, people that have – they need a lot of leads to keep their guys busy.
Yeah.
You got a couple thousand people now in your database. You're like, whoa, I got a lot of stuff going on. So I would say it's a little easier for the design build firms.
Okay. Yeah, their job sizes are bigger and,
they have less people to market to, so they can reach out, handwritten notes, and, just real personal. The larger amount of leads that you need, you have to have a different strategy. How can you stay connected to your audience and, invite them to different events, reaching back out to them, doing some video chats with them, doing a little, podcast or whatever.
Yeah.
So I would still say the old school way of networking in person, writing handwritten notes, kind of that whole personalizing is great. So
you talk about not keeping in touch. You and I have talked about this before, but I remember my first painting company years ago. We went 3-4 years, did hundreds and hundreds of jobs, and I didn't have a database.
Mm-hmm.
I think of that now, and I'm like, yeah, that was smart, And I guarantee you I left a couple million in sales on the table. I guarantee it, because after that 3.5-4 year period of not doing that, when I learned, more about what I should be doing, I saw the results of what having a database and keeping in touch with people and just picking up the phone. I mean, just little simple things like you're driving through the neighborhood and there's a house you worked on, and just call them up. Just say, hey, I'm driving by and just curious how the patio is holding up. Or, hey, is the deck still looking good? What's up? Even if you leave a voicemail, I've done that several times through the years, and a month or two later, they'll call me back and go, oh, hey, thanks for your message. By the way, we've been meaning to call you. We want to get a bid on this. Exactly. And so it's, when we're out of sight, we're out of mind, and we want to be I also saw that by staying in touch with people in my database and email, and I know you'll speak to this, is not only did my past customers hire me more for repeat business, but my referrals would always go up. Because I'm on the minds of my customers and they're standing at the soccer game with another mom or whatever the heck it is. And, they have their conversations. They go, oh, you should call Tom or whoever.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's funny. As you're talking through this, I thought of one thing that I did years ago. I actually had a marketing coach kind of give me this idea, and I did it. She said to reach out to your existing clients and have a conversation with them about how you can grow your business. So you're actually reaching out to your customers. I mean, not just how can I make more sales, but how can I be more a better, put your better paint company, better remodeler.
Yeah.
So she said, pick your top clients that you think would be willing to meet with you. Sit down with them, have a list of questions. Don't waste their time, but maybe give them something in return, like a gift card for their time, whatever. So I picked some about 4 or 5 top clients that tended to use this every few years. And I went to their office or their home and asked them, hey, I want to be the best painting company in this area.
Mm-hmm.
What are your suggestions on how to get there? How can I be more involved in the community? So, again, excuse me. So I would do this, and I was surprised that everyone I contacted was fine to meet with me, and it was a fantastic conversation. They would give me a list of maybe some networking type things to do. They were involved in nonprofit type things. They said, hey, we'd love to have you involved in my group over here. These are very wealthy folks. So you get referrals out of that. You get sound business advice. You're able to talk to your clients. Heck, I could have done that full time. I only did five. Okay. And that was enough to keep me going and get more involved in the community.
Was there anything about that those conversations with those people that really surprised you? That you didn't expect to hear?
Yeah, because I actually asked them, how can I improve?
Mm-hmm.
And I got a list of – I think I took 2 pages of notes of how I can improve. I thought, man, I'm doing pretty well. I mean, we've been around in business for almost 30 years, my dad's company. And so these guys like us. They use us all the time. But they actually had stuff against us. So they're like, well, you know, I didn't like the certain guy they had in your home. And he was describing something about the guy. It wasn't like it was a character flaw. I'm like, okay, well, that guy's not working for us anymore. But, I mean, just little funny things that I don't like, you know. I can't even remember all the things, but I do remember some of them were little piddly things that I thought, okay, all right, I'll make a note about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then after what I would actually did is if I actually did some of these action items and tried to take care of them, I would make the notes, send them an email or a note and say, hey, you brought this up. You told me this is a good idea. I went ahead and joined this group. One guy told me to take an accounting class. And he said, you should take an accounting class. I think he was just giving me business advice. Like, you should be, you know, you don't have to be an accountant, but you should do business accounting class. So I did. I joined an accounting class at a local junior college. Sent the guy a letter and said, hey, I finished my accounting class. Thanks to you. Appreciate that pointer.
Hmm.
Really helpful. So just, you know, and then they liked the fact that they helped you out.
Yeah.
And your friends, you know, they're trusted advisors.
Well, and it's exactly it. And you think about the message it sends to those people when you reach back out to them and say, hey, I implemented something that you recommended. You know, it truly means it. I think it communicates that you didn't just have this little meeting just to, you know, act like you gave a crap, but you truly cared about what they had to say and their input. And you respected that. So I have a mistake here that people make. It's based on a recent experience. So I just want a word of caution, everybody. when you are walking down the street in New Orleans and a man tells you not to walk down to a certain area with your buddy, you should what, David?
You should not do it.
You should not do it. Why? What happened to those two guys named David and Tom in New Orleans last month?
We kept walking.
Yeah, we kept walking after this dude said,
block.
He goes, y'all wouldn't, I wouldn't walk down that way if I was you. And we're like, yeah, okay, dude, thanks. And so then what happened?
I got to the other end of the block and like, Tom, I think we really should go back.
Why is that? What did you see?
Well, besides the guys making out like I've never seen before.
Yeah, we ended up in the wrong district. And yeah. So we came back, and that guy was standing there, and he goes, I told you didn't want to go down that way. And we're like, all right, dude, what's in it for you? Why'd you warn us? I just want somebody to buy me a beer. And we're like, here, man, pay the man.
Pay the man $5.
All right, so there's your life lesson of the day. So, all right, back on track here with other mistakes. Give us a couple more. I know you got a big list there, but give us maybe your top ones that you really feel.
Well, some of these we'll just go through quickly. So since it's a podcast, they can pause this and review it, right?
Yep.
So two are kind of together. One is it's never good enough, and then they spend too much time overthinking. Those are kind of two things that, you know, again, I went back on a website that I had looked at probably 6 years ago.
Okay.
And there's a cabinet maker. He told me all the stuff about the site that he didn't like and how he wanted it to be a certain way and about his business. I mean, he was a total craftsman. Well, 6 years later, the site is still the same. It's not a six-year-old site. It's ancient. It's super old. But he still hasn't done anything in 6 years later. And I see that all the time. They want their marketing to be a certain way. They talk about their marketing to be a certain way. I want to be this,
mm-hmm.
and that's where it stays. And then 10 years later, they're still talking about it. I want to be this way.
Yeah,
this is how I want my company to be. I want to be known. And he's probably not all that well known because he still continues to do this thing. Probably it's a very similar amount of work.
Yeah,
doesn't grow.
And he's this amazing craftsman that people should know, right? And
you should know.
You,
oh,
you
absolutely.
Think of
yeah.
the potential he has, and so think of it. You know, if you're a landscaper, think of the first patio that you built, you know, 10, 20 years ago, and compare it to the one you built last week. It's probably a lot better. hopefully you've gotten better through the years. I know, you know, the first time I ever painted some, I mean, I think back to some of the first people that hired me when I was a dude in a van by myself. And I'm like, oh my God, those people were so kind to me.
Yeah. Why did they hire you?
Yeah. And,
it's your smile, your charm.
You know, so our marketing's the same way. You know, you've got to take action. You have to, you know, like you said, don't spend too much time overthinking some things. Get it out and try to send that right message and adjust and adapt over time and make it better. So that's a good point.
Yep. All right. The next thing is on branding. So mm-hmm. I think this is a big one. It's they think it's for big corporations with big budgets, right? Yeah. And it's not. So I had this conversation with a guy who, you know, was asking questions about should they advertise on like a house site or Angie's List or whatever. And then his comment was basically, you know, it's all branding stuff. And that's takes a lot of money and it doesn't work. That's for big corporations. Hmm. So, you know, moving on to other points, but branding is everything you do. It's how you answer the phones or not answer the phones. It's the community events you do. It's the content marketing done right. So it's how you run your company that your, you know, your prospects will see is either a good way to brand or not so good a way to brand. So, but you know, it does take some money as well to brand your company.
Yeah.
You can definitely spend, it's going to cost you out of pocket or it's going to take your time. So, but again, so this also conversation was based on the, you know, logo itself versus branding and, you know, so we can kind of go down that trail, but that's the point. So what they do is they just don't brand. They just, nope, this is my company. People should hire me because they're missing out because I'm an expert. I'm a craftsman, so just hire me.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about the logo and stuff. That's an identity. Mm-hmm. You know, that's your company identity. Branding is a story. It's how do people feel when they see or hear your name or, you know, your logo and things like that. I remember when we went to China to adopt my daughter, we were – I remember being in Guangzhou and I turned the corner and I saw the Golden Arches and I never eat at McDonald's, but I ate at McDonald's there because the story that played in my mind was at least I know they have systems in place and that I'm going to eat something that's probably not going to kill me.
Yeah.
Okay. At least not today.
Yeah, and, you know what to expect.
Yeah. Well, it is going to kill you if you eat McDonald's, but you get the point. Sure. So it, what it represented, it represented safety for me, mm-hmm. you know, in an unfamiliar place. And so when people are going to hire a contractor, we want to make them feel safe. And one of the ways to do that is to be involved in the community and give back to the community. And, you know, you can spend a lot of money on it, but God, with social media the way it is and Facebook ads and being so cheap, there's so many things that we can do that tie back to what you were sharing about content and educating that will help build your brand. And really, it's just going to take some time and commitment, you know, on your part, you know, with a yep. video camera or a, you know, typewriter. Did I really just say typewriter? But anyway.
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
And my kids don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
So, all right. Anyways, branding's important. It's everything you do for your business or don't do. Mm-hmm. Do good branding. I mean, it's like, you know, think of fitness because you're into fitness and, you know, CrossFit is a brand, you know, but it's just exercising, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, there's gyms on every corner in major cities. So CrossFit has done a good job branding themselves.
Yeah.
Now it's a big corporation, but it didn't start that way. It was a name. So even my local clinic that I go to for martial arts, it's they've branded themselves enough, and it's a very small company, but we want to take that sticker of their gym and mm-hmm. stick it on the back of our vehicles. Why? Because we're proud to be yeah. part of that gym. So
yep.
it'd be really cool to see a pond company, a painter, a plumber, to have stickers that people want to put on the back of their car. That would be cool.
That would be cool.
We've got to make that happen.
Or tattoos.
Tattoos,
they can
yeah.
get our logos tattooed on their arm or something. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
You know, with a little.
I wonder how much you'd pay someone to get another motor one on.
Yeah, there you go. A little scan thing on your arm that you can scan it and it goes to a landing page.
Yep.
What do they call it? QR codes. Codes. That's QR, what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
All right.
Those are old. Yeah. All right. So, again, what else? So, they're too tied to their craft, I think was another thing, the mistake that people make. So I've seen this, and again, this is somewhat related, that they can't separate the craft from growing their business.
Mm.
So I think a lot of guys are stuck. They're
yep.
stuck in the past. They're stuck in, hey, I'm a great, you know, craftsman.
We call that in the Contractor Sales Academy, we call that the starving artist.
There you go.
You know,
and they turn into complainers too, right? Mm. I mean, I'm not going to mention names here, but we've been to conferences where, you know, year after year, you see the same guys that sometimes you know they're great guys, mm-hmm. but they're stuck. They're stuck and they complain.
Yeah,
and they're craftsmen too. Now, I'd probably want those guys to build my house or paint, but people don't know that because they're stuck and they're not going to grow.
No, that's a good one, man. That's a really good one. And it, you know, don't listen. Nobody. If you think of all the bad contractors that are out in the world that do crappy work and, you know, stiff people on, you know, money or whatever the heck it is, and you happen to be one of those really good guys that does amazing work and you're ethical, then we want to get your message out there. We want you to scale your business. We want more leads coming in so that, you know, you can, you know, raise the bar in your, you know, neck of the woods there. So, which reminds me, when you talked about this whole craftsman mentality and starving artist thing and all this other stuff, what do you say to the contractor? I just talked to somebody the other day on the phone, and they said, well, I don't need to advertise. Everything's word of mouth. Like that mentality. Where's mm-hmm. that come from, and what do you do with that?
So when I've seen that, and when someone says, I don't need to advertise, it's all word of mouth, I wonder, you know, if they are growing. Man, a lot of these guys are – They might appear fine. They might say, yeah, life's good. Mm-hmm. But they're not – I don't really think they're growing. There's a few exceptions out there. I'm sure we can find some success stories out there. But right. In general, if you're only doing referrals or relying on that and you're trying to build a team and you're trying to grow to a certain level, I think it's really hard to do that strictly by referrals. There's realtors do it all the time, you know, but they have there's coaches out there that you know only do the whole referral system. So yeah, there's a place for that. But again, even if they're going to go that way, it still takes a lot of effort and time and money to do that. There's right. a process. There's a sales system behind that. But if you're just talking like what you're mentioning, like the contractor just says, like, "Hey, I work by referrals," they're not doing much. They're not growing because they're stuck.
Yeah,
they have to do more than just relying. And when I look at like the numbers, the sources of leads coming in, the really strong, stable, older companies have been around a long time. And, you know, they might pick up 60, 70, even 80% of their work might be repeat referral.
Right.
And then the rest, though, where's that other – if they want to grow, where's that other 20, 30% grow? That's where that growth comes, where they got to make their numbers. If they want to be a 1.5 million company or 2 or 3.
Yeah.
That it's extremely difficult to take that, especially if you look from, let's just say, again, I'm going back to painting because that's my industry. A homeowner is only, or even a business, they're only going to spend so much money with you every year. So if you're trying to grow and you're going to go back to your existing database or the referrals, there's only, again, so much work that's going to come out there. So you do have to have irons in the fire. You got to have a good marketing plan to make sure that phone keeps ringing.
Yeah.
And those guys are the ones that tend to get slow. They have the real. They don't really have a steady workflow. You know, they're going to have those highs and lows. You know, they're going to be dead in the water for a while, right? We've seen that. And then they're going to be struggling, or they just don't make enough money. I mean, that's
sure.
They stay where they're at. They just keep it to themselves. And you know, in that sense, I say, might as well work for somebody else. Why take the stress of running a business?
Yeah.
If you're going to make your basic income that you can barely survive on because you work by referrals and you're a craftsman.
Mm-hmm. So, is it possible to predict lead flow in a contracting business?
Yeah, I would say so. It takes a little bit of data from past years too. So, right. Kind of want to look at the. I mean, you can make some projections right off the bat. Say, hey, we want to get so many leads. If you're a brand new business, it's going to be a little more difficult without spending a lot of money. But a company that's been around a while, you just kind of look back at maybe the last 2 or 3 years and kind of look at lead flow. When you typically get the most and the least? What type of work? And then you can project and say, okay, this year we want to do, you know, we want to stay the same or we want to grow by 20%.
Yeah.
I have quite a few companies that are very good at the tracking side of things, and I can. One is Lancaster Painting out in California. They're incredible. They're one of the best at projecting leads. Yeah. It's incredible how close it is. But and it's we're supposed to grow by like 20% this year. And we have two with them. We have like a 20% growth, and then we have like this other growth mode. Like, what if we can get to here? And it's like 40% growth.
Okay.
And we're already hitting the 20% right now with LeadFo. We're hitting like 25 or 30%. So it's really neat to see them do that and increasing a little bit of awareness here and there, increasing our budget. But yeah, you can do it. But they have data to back that up. They have 5 years of data to look at.
All right. So what do we just a couple more minutes here if you're cool with that. What do we do with the – maybe it's either the brand new contractor or it's the guy who is listening to this who's been that referral-only guy who goes, yeah, I probably should – you know, do something to market my business. So kind of they're both in the same boat in one sense.
Mm-hmm.
Although the existing guy, obviously he's got some referral work and stuff like that. But what are some of the first things that you personally would do if you opened up, you know, David's, you know, closet door painting company or something in your community right now? What are the very first things you would do, knowing what you know, having seen what you've seen, worked with hundreds of contractors and all this other stuff over the years?
Yeah, that's a good question. So if I was to do that right now, today, I would probably, we want to embrace change. Not get stuck in the past. So we want to, you know, there are some old school things you can do and there's some new school things. I think a couple of the first things I would do is probably instead of just, I might even join like a co-work place, a place that you can work with other local, you know, it's not just like the BNI chamber, that's networking. Mm-hmm. But maybe just try to find a remote office where there's a lot of smaller businesses in your community that you can share an office space with them. So that's becoming more popular, co-working.
Yep.
That's what I do right now. So I have a home office and I go to our downtown area and work a couple days a week out there. And there's all sorts of different people down there. So that's one quick and easy way to kind of have a not a lot of money up front, but you can work, do what you're supposed to do. And then you have other people around you that you can network with or ask questions. So again, co-working will be one. I would say I would definitely do a simple website. I wouldn't go overboard and spend a lot of money on it, but I'd make sure that it's got the content marketing strategy in there. That means a blog, and I'd probably pick for me a video and really start the educational process right off the bat. And I would try to do that better than my competition. I would of course do the research and figure out who those players are, and I would start talking about the things that are important to me and educating my audience. So I'd spend a lot of time and effort on pushing the word out there and educating. I would do the co-work thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wouldn't spend a whole lot of money on like the, you know, the print media type of side. I mean, you could do mailers and all that, but that's be a lot of money up front.
Yeah.
So that would be more for an established company or someone who has some marketing dollars already, capital to do that. If I lacked the capital, I would do as much networking. I would do as much online connections without being a promoter, but I'd be an educator for sure. And I would try to do some local community things where I can just be a speaker too at. So I know be an educator there too.
That's good stuff. And most of what you said is relational, right? So it's about relationships when you're that new guy. So you touched on it briefly when you brought up print advertising, but what are your thoughts? What do you see for companies that are doing direct mail, contractors that do direct mail?
I think just about any marketing that you do, there's always going to be a return. Mm-hmm. So when people say that print media is dead, I don't think it's dead. Or there would not be any U.S. wouldn't see a postal service guy walking by every day.
Right.
So obviously it works, but you know, sometimes I wonder if it's actually sometimes it could be less expensive than the things you could do online. So I see you can spend a lot of money on paid search and a heck of a lot of money you get.
Right.
I had a guy that I started working with who, again, I don't think he knew his numbers real well when I took it over, but he was doing paid search and SEO work, and his cost per lead, he was a roofing contractor, I think it was, you know, pushing like, was that definitely over $500 a lead. I think it may have been as high as 750 or 800 bucks when that phone rang, and he was spending thousands a month on paid search. So in that sense, he probably would have got a better return doing mailings than paid search, because he had the wrong person on that team doing paid search and he was just throwing money at it. At least with direct mail, you can get a nice clean list or give it to the post office and say, hey, your roof needs your roof is caving in, we're here to fix it,
right?
You know, or painting or roof cleaning or whatever. So yeah, in that sense, but you got to be consistent at it. Sometimes people do like the neighborhood mailers, and I don't think that works really well unless you're going to go back and hit them again. Marketing hasn't changed, where people still have to know who you are and if you're here to stay. Are you part of that community?
Mm-hmm.
So if you just get a, oh, hey, you know, let's do it, we're working at this job, let's mail 50 mailers around here. Yeah, there might be a, you know, you might get a call, but you want to continue to hit those up. There are franchises out there in the painting industry that still mail, and they mail all the time.
Yeah.
So they've got big budgets, big marketing teams. Obviously, they feel that radio, TV, and print still work. You just got a heck of a lot more money on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, do what it used to do. You know, just takes five or six times before someone sees you, they'll call you. So, but I'm not a big fan of, like, the magazine stuff as well. They still charge. I think, again, it serves a purpose, but it's expensive. So I'm hoping these print media companies will lower their cost or work a deal that makes it a little more feasible, because they still think, hey, you know, we have a subscriber rate of 20,000 people and you should be spending a couple thousand dollars a month on this. That's branding, but it's, I would rather use the money somewhere else.
Yeah. And I, you know, I mean, you know this about me, but I like going the content route and creating content that people are already searching for online.
Yeah.
You know, so that's that. But, so you touched on a minute ago, cost per lead. Explain to those listening that might not understand what that is and why it's important.
Oh yeah. Well, if you spend, well, even if you spend your time, but if you spend money on marketing, when you get a lead, there's a cost involved. So at some point you kind of need to know, well, what is it costing for that phone to ring? How could, and that would go back to why should you be answering the phone versus it sending it to a recording.
Yeah.
So if you're networking and you're doing mailings or you're doing content marketing and the phone starts to ring, hey, I'm getting some leads here. You got to go back and, okay, let's dig a little bit here and say, well, how much time or money did it take to get that phone to ring or these emails to come in? And so at some point you want to make sure that cost per lead and then the sale, how much does it cost to sell it? You know, how can I get that cost down? Or, you know, what type of leads am I getting? So if I am going to spend, it's not necessarily is the lead cost as cheap as it can be. It's more of what type of lead am I actually getting? And then you can look at the cost. So, and for some industries, for especially the design build, you know, let's give an example of the painting again. So if a painter might, a good lead for him might be anywhere from $50 to $100 a lead.
Yeah.
You know, with all the different types of marketing out there. And then if you run the numbers, it's probably going to be close to $100. And maybe if he sells 35% of them, it's going to cost him around $300 for a client. But for a design build firm, it might take 6 months for someone to make the decision to use a design build firm to build that house or that deck or whatever. His lead cost most likely will either cost a lot more, because it'll be, you might have to do some follow-ups and, you know, home visits,
right,
or content marketing. You know, it's going to take a lot longer. The sales process takes a lot longer than it is for the smaller home improvement companies.
Okay.
So
basically, if I spend $1,000 in marketing this month and I get 10 leads, my cost per lead is $100 a lead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Good job.
Okay. And if I sell two of those jobs, I take the $1,000 divided by two, and it costs me $500 to get a sale.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and this goes back to the, you know, data alert from earlier of being able to make good decisions for how you're spending your money in the years following now, if you're tracking this information and understanding that. So that's why it's important to understand this. And if you want to get really crazy, track, you know, how much money you spend per different lead source and then count up the leads per those sources and then see what you sell based on that. And that'll help you make good decisions about what to chop and what to do more of.
Yeah, and I don't think you need to get carried away on the tracking per se. On every business is a little different. So I know contractors that are not big data crunchers. They spend a lot of money on marketing. You know, they're all doing all sorts of different things. And they're getting the leads and they're getting the sales and everything's happy. And they have a general idea of where it's all coming from. They got a CRM to track it. But if I was asking what's their cost per lead and cost per lead, they have no idea. Mm-hmm. They don't really care. If there was an issue or the problem or something dropped, of course, they'll go back to their data and look at it. So I wouldn't get bogged down. I do have the flip side, people that look at that all day long and think they live by the cost per lead and cost per sale.
Okay.
So and they don't grow because they're like, no, I got to get the – and then they'll look at like Angie's List and other things and go, well, hey, I got to get my cost per lead down to $50. And if I can't, I'm going to cut it. So sometimes you – each source, marketing source, is not identical as well. So it's something might be a higher cost per lead for, you know, Angie's List or House or whatever. But the overall strategy, you know, you should be hitting your numbers. So
okay. All right. So I'm going to totally put you on the spot right now.
All right. Ready?
All right.
You do that all the time, so I'm used to it.
Do I? Do I really put you on the spot all the time? All
right,
man. All right, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to mention a marketing tactic, and all you get to do is say yes or no. All right,
I'm ready.
All right, so Yelp.
There's a do you like the pause there?
Yeah, I was cracking up.
Should someone actually use Yelp, huh? Man, you really put me on the spot there.
Yeah, yes or no. That's all you can say. Can't say anything more. Guns to your head. Okay. Yellow Pages.
No.
House.
Yes.
Home Advisor.
No.
Angie's List.
Yes.
Home Shows.
I wish there'd be like a C. Another maybe. It depends.
See, I knew you'd say it depends on most of these.
Depends, so yes.
So home shows.
Yes.
Direct mail.
That's it. So my longer pause means depends, right? Yes.
Paid search.
Yes.
Door knocking.
Yes.
Email marketing.
Yes.
Yard signs.
Yes.
Vehicle wraps.
You got it.
All right, man. No, that's a lot of – so that's a lot of stuff that you would just go, yeah, you need to be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's how I answer most people, though. Like, if should I be doing this? The answer is probably yes, because some guys don't do anything.
Right.
And I know people are making money off of just about any one of those things there.
Oh, I forgot one. Facebook ads.
Yes.
All right. There we go. That was the one I forgot.
So that's traditional marketing or you know, it's you got to pay some money and you're going to get different results for sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, one of my most popular blog posts that I wrote a couple years ago was about should I be advertising on House. So there's it's really interesting to – just the comments. So yeah. Tons of comments in there.
Okay.
Most of it's negative. You know, people are like, I tried House for 2 months, didn't work. Candid. So, I mean, that's your typical contractor response. I tried it for a month, didn't work.
Yeah.
So they're all pissed off at House because it's a horrible platform, right? But I don't think it's horrible, but there's a strategy behind that. I think there's that's same with Angie's List. I can work with Angie's List. Like Angie's List? No, I don't have to like Yelp or Angie's List or any of these sites out there, but they serve a purpose. If I can, you know, wiggle and get a better price, get what I want out of it, then yeah, I'll do it. And again, it depends on the area too. I got guys crushing it on Angie's List, making it a killing. But we also don't want to be putting all our eggs in one basket. Or I've also had guys pull out of Angie's List with my help. And said, we don't want to be tied to Angie's List. We want to grow our business without them. And so we've made other plans and took them out really just because we could, and they're doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
So
so a couple more questions. I'm going to let you go because each time you answer some, it makes me think of something else. So
I'm going to break this into a couple podcasts.
I know, man. how do I ask this? When somebody gives a contractor a Google review, okay, you with me so far? I'm not over your head yet, am I?
No.
All right. When somebody gives a contractor a Google review, does that improve their SEO? Do they get found easier or more better?
More better.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that. So I would say the answer to that is most likely yes. In general, Google doesn't want just reviews from their platform because they're going to look at other directories out there to say, well, all right, well, you know, they've got to have clients that aren't just Google folks. Mm-hmm. So they'll look at the Yahoo, Bing, they'll look at, I guess they look at Facebook. Facebook and Google aren't friends. But they'll look at all the other platforms out there as well. But yeah, in general, as of 2016, as we're doing this in April,
yeah,
it can help. That's the last article or advice I've got from other SEO guys too, that yes, local quality reviews does help or hurt your business if it's positive or negative.
Okay. And with that whole SEO question, and I know this is there's a huge, it depends with all this. What does a website, what is the average contractor's website? Let's take blogging and content out of the mix right now. Okay. And so for those of you listening, like I believe that, you know, as you feed your, when you create a blog post and a video and all this other stuff, you're feeding Google data that's relevant to your industry. And that's a good thing. So let's move that aside. Pretend that the website does not have any of that in place at this point. What is really needed from an SEO point of view for the average contractor just on the basic website?
So what's needed? So if you take content marketing out, your question is like, what do they need to do on their site?
I know you know this. You know, a lot of people will say, you know, I've been paying an SEO guy $1,500 a month for 3 years. What is the average contractor? I mean, how do they know whether they should be doing that or not? How do they know what's really needed on their basic website and all that?
Well, I think the first thing, I don't think it takes that long to get, you shouldn't be paying someone for several years and not know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. There should definitely be some fruit from that. Now, you know, SEO work does take some time. But if you're not going to start with the content marketing kind of things, then some of the basic, simple SEO types of things would be making sure that your name, address, and phone number are correct on directories. So you have your website, make sure your name, address, and phone number is on your website, and then make sure that it's also on the directories out there. Directory would be – Yellow Page would be a directory. Yelp would be a directory. Google has a directory. There's gazillions more out there.
So consistency is key.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Absolutely. So that's number one. If your SEO guy doesn't do that right off the bat, then there's programs. One's Yext, Yext, and then the other one's Moz Local, M-O-Z, Moz Local. You can pay a monthly fee, and it's not that expensive. If you want to keep up, the SEO guy probably is using one of those tools. The Moz is really popular to do that, but if not, you can check in and see how you're doing. So it's not just all on your website. On your actual website, there's just basic, simple things that need to be consistent. So again, name, address, and phone number. I would also say that your content is not stuffed with a bunch of keywords everywhere, top to bottom, although it was an old strategy that still sometimes works, can work, mm-hmm. but it's not the best way, right?
Yeah.
But you know, making sure that the page titles at the top, where you want to bookmark something, that clearly states what that page is about. So just some simple things like that. There's not a whole lot. The SEO guys, what they're going to be doing once they get the actual website optimized, making sure all the pages are laid out correctly. There's a sitemap on the website. A sitemap is like just a directory telling people. It's another page in your site that's like a table of content.
Okay.
So once that's there and they've done their directory type things, then they'll probably look at some type of link building campaign. So if there's no blog and all that, they'll reach out to the web out there and just try to start looking for influence out there and do link building. So okay. that's a time consuming process. I mean, a lot of people charge a lot of money for that, and they're looking for, so if like for a, again, a paint contractor might be a good link, might be something from Sherwin-Williams Paint or Benjamin Moore, because they have a lot of authority on the website.
Yep.
So maybe they've got a really cool article that you can be like a guest writer for. So there is still content related. It's really hard in this industry, in this day and age, to do anything without content marketing.
Okay.
It's almost impossible. I mean, so.
Good stuff. All right. So, right now you get I'm just going to give you an opportunity. Anything that we didn't touch on that you feel would be your parting words today for any contractors that want to, you know, up their marketing and stuff like that. Any words of advice? This is your chance to just kind of get on a soapbox for a minute or so.
Yeah. So soapbox would be, you know, you guys as the owners or, you know, the managers listen to this. I would say, you know, have a plan, embrace the future, embrace technology, embrace the kind of tools that are out there today. Don't get in the way, but help your team to get things done. Get behind your team. You don't have to understand everything. It's just like me taking the accounting class. I didn't have to be an accountant for my business, but I at least had to know something about the numbers, right? So mm-hmm. with marketing and all that, I think owners, you guys need to care about the marketing department and sales. And so I've had enough owners that kind of say, well, I'll hire this digital marketing team. I'll hire this blogger to go blog and take pictures. Go take pictures. Well, you as the owner need to get involved and get your input in there, motivate your team, get behind it. So, you know, so if you're not behind it and it's not important to you, it won't be successful. And so I say that meaning you don't have to write every single blog yourself. But if you take an interest and you read it over and give your writer some feedback and say, well, let's make that a little stronger. This is more sounds like us. You're not micromanaging, but you're right behind the team. And you're encouraging the people in your organization to keep writing those Facebook posts and do the, you know, all of the engagement out there. But again, and I think that's what Steve Jobs from Apple did a good job. But he was he motivated his team. He was a great motivator.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's good stuff, man. So, David, if a contractor is listening to this and they want to get some help with their marketing and stuff like that, I got you all choked up over there. Don't
I know.
where do they find you? How do they get in touch?
Well, they can go to my website, adavidcreation.com. People always ask, too, why did I come up with that name? Because it's a long name. I've tried to change that name a bunch of times. I've had that name for about 25 years. So when I was a kid, I would play around with design type stuff, and I came up with that name. So it's a little harder to say without seeing the on the website here, but it's the letter A, davidcreation.com. They can go there. You can fill out a form there. You can also connect with me on, you know, Facebook or wherever they want. And I'm located in Maryland, in Frederick, which is just north of D.C., but I really don't have that many local clients. A lot of my guys I work with are all over the country.
Yeah. Well, I'll definitely put links to your stuff in our show notes. And, dude, this was long overdue. I had a good time just hanging out with you and chatting. I appreciate you sharing a bunch of your wisdom with our contractors out there. And, you know, again, I appreciate you being on, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right, bud. All right, Strongpreneur Nation, check it out. If you enjoyed this discussion I had with David Chisholm of adavidcreation.com, head over to his website, read his stuff. I guarantee you that you will walk away a little bit smarter in the marketing department, and you'll be equipped to push your contracting business forward a little bit. Also, don't forget to head over to iTunes and give us a rating and a review for this so that we can continue to push out content to other contractors like you and help you all build uncommon businesses. And then finally, if you want to head over to Facebook, type in the search bar, Strongpreneur Nation Mastermind Group. It is a closed group where we talk business and numbers and marketing and math and all things contracting to help you be better. There is no cost to the group. You just request access. We push a button And we let you into the group, and we ask you to, you know, just participate and help add value to someone else's life while you're there. So I encourage you to do that. So again, I appreciate you guys, you know, listening to David and I today talk about marketing your contracting business. And we will see you guys next time on the Strongpreneur Nation podcast. Travis, rock us out.